From Quality Radio Productions, it's another edition of the Upstate Radio Theater, another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with an episode of Are These Our Children? The series was produced in San Francisco for ABC Radio in the late 1940s. It's a crime drama of sorts, but unlike other crime dramas of the day, Are These Our Children focused exclusively on true case histories from juvenile delinquency court. This broadcast is from November 17th of 1947, and while I don't have a complete list of the cast, I believe that among the cast is a young Jack Webb. Listen for yourself and see what you think. This broadcast, as I said, from November 17th, 1947 on ABC, is entitled Edith Hayes. Are These Our Children? Opening up this week's Upstate Radio Theater.
Are These Our Children? San Francisco studios, the American Broadcasting Company presents Are These Our Children? Half-hour dramatizations of actual case histories taken from the files of juvenile delinquency court. The names in these case histories are altered, but the facts are not. These events happened today and yesterday and the day before to people who didn't ask, are these our children? The file on today's case is marked Edith Hayes. The roots of it, or of others like it, may be found in your city, your neighborhood, your home. For her tragedy is based upon a common attitude, bigotry.
Inspector, this is Sergeant Libby. Yeah, I hate to bother you at this time of night, but I got something that may be hot. I don't quite know, but a young dame just wandered in. She may be a lead in all these car thefts. Yeah, she says she's one of these local clouders for a big syndicate who wants to give herself up. Huh? No, name's Edith Hayes, and she's never been in before. Of course, Inspector, she isn't really a bad girl, she says. She didn't know what she was getting into. Yeah, if I had a buck every time I heard that. Anyway, we're stuck with her, innocence and all. If you want to come down, I guess we better dig into her story. From the looks of her, it ought to be good reading.
Okay, Edith, relax now, huh? You'll start asking and you start answering.
Now, that's what I came in for.
How old are you?
17.
Where do you live?
Strand Hotel on 4th Street.
Don't you have a home?
Yeah, I had one. 324 Commercial Street.
Your parents alive?
Yeah, if you can call it that. They aren't buried yet.
We'll get around to what you mean by that, if it's important.
Skip it. If you know Commercial Street, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know it. But the secret is still yours. The point is, you came in here tonight all warmed up to talk about a lot of car thefts. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. School's out.
The sergeant tells me there's something about an organization you're working for. You're willing to put the finger on the whole outfit. We like girls like you.
Well, that's the general idea. I'm not out after profit tonight. Just so we understand one another. I'm doing this because it's the only way. I wanted to get out of the racket, and they wouldn't let me, so I'm showing them. Just so we understand each other.
Yeah, I guess we do.
I got into this mess with my eyes open. I knew what I was doing. I thought it was the way to work things out. I thought if you want something...
Save it.
I got sick of being looked at because I wore cheap print dresses and
had scout shoes. I got sick of being called a girl who lived on Commercial Street.
Everything all right?
Sure, everything's all right.
But school, Edith, it's only 2:00.
I quit school.
Edith!
I ate my lunch and just walked out. They can have my share. Little Edie just got crammed jam full.
Oh, you gotta go back.
I don't have to go back, and you can save yourself a lot of screaming and yelling if you understand right now I mean it. I'm not going back.
Edith, I don't know what happened, but you gotta go back.
I knew I was gonna have trouble with you. Why does something have to happen? Why can't I just get fed up?
You never acted like this before.
Why can't I just decide that it's all a big messed up waste of time? All right, I learned something. I can read and write. I can count. That's enough for me. I'm going to get a job.
A job? Couldn't you wait one more year till you're through with high school? Your Pa and me, we planned everything so you could finish high school.
Mom, you and Pa are going to keep needling and needling until you get yourself hurt. So I guess it might as well be now as later. I got ashamed. That's why I quit.
Edith, what kind of talk is that?
Sure, I'm acting crazy, but that's it. I'm ashamed, ashamed of everything, and you don't get it, do you?
I never heard of anybody talking like this before.
Sure, because I'm crazy, that's why. Ashamed of my shoes and my clothes and you and Pa and this house and me. That's why I quit.
Edith, don't talk like that.
You wanted to know, didn't you? And you still don't get it, because you've been here so long you don't know anything different. All you know is sending Pa to work in the morning and waiting for him at night and talking over the back fence to our kind of people.
Edith!
I used to feel sorry for you, but I was wrong. That's the way it ought to be.
Edith, we're a daughter to talk like this.
You wanted to know, didn't you? Maybe you went through it, too. You never said, but I'm not going to anymore. If I have to be the poor girl from Commercial Street, I'm going to stay on Commercial Street or do something about it. Do you understand what I mean, Mom?
I don't know, either.
I think you do. You know, I'm not beefing about you and Pa.
We always did the best we could.
I know you did, and I did, too. I've been sitting next to a girl. We've been together all the way through from second to third grade. We used to play together and walk partway home together. But you ought to see us now. The princess and the tramp.
Edith, you can't talk like that anymore.
Talking about the dances she and the rest of them go to and their new clothes and permanent waves, well, that's all right. But I heard her talking about me today and that isn't...
Don't pay no attention,
Edith. Pay no attention. Well, there's going to be a party at the English class at her house. And you know what she said?
Don't pay no attention.
I heard her. She said, oh, we can't ask her. She just wouldn't fit. Well, she's right. I'm not trying to...
Let them talk. That don't hurt us.
Not anymore. It doesn't hurt us. Because little Edie isn't going to be there for him to talk about. Little Edie's going to stay on her own side of the street from now on. Little Edie knows where she fits.
I don't think we'd better bother Nun Ray. We better just let her have her own way.
It don't make no sense to me. Here we skimp and save ever since we had her to get her through school. And now with less than a year to go, she quit.
She thought she had enough. She wants to get a job, and I think that's all right. I told her I'd talk to you and see if you wouldn't understand.
Well, I don't. Where is she now?
Yeah, I don't know. She went downtown to a show or something. She ate before you come home.
Yeah, I suppose we'll have all that now. Chasing every night.
Ray, I don't think you got any need to worry. Edith's a level-headed girl and she'll get a job and work hard at it.
Well, I hope you're right. But it don't sound very level-headed to me to up and quit school all of a sudden one afternoon. You sure she ain't in trouble?
Why, trouble? What in the world give you that idea?
I told you, it don't make sense.
Yes, it does, Ray, and... Please, just leave her alone. She'll be all right, but just leave her alone, Ray. She's got to work things out.
Edie, I gotta say it once more. It's good to see you around. I've been waiting a long time for this.
Sure, Max, sure. I can see you lost weight worrying about me.
Not worrying. Just waiting for you to grow up. And now you have, if you know what I mean.
Hey, take it easy. Don't you know I'm the shy schoolgirl type?
Well, you'll get over it.
Well, I'm sure gonna try.
How you gonna start? Outside of spending a lot of time with me.
And at this rate, I'll be too tired to do anything else.
Well, is that bad?
Not so far. But I don't think the paychecks will be very big.
As big as you want them and as often as you want them. If you ever need any dough, you just let me know. I mean it.
Well, thanks, Mac. That's darn sweet of you, but bright and early tomorrow morning, I'm going to start out and get a job.
Well, don't forget, I mean it.
Thanks. That sounds like it would be an easy habit to get into. You ought to be careful who you make the offer to.
I am, Edie. I know what I'm doing.
Mac, I got to go home. My old man will raise the roof, and besides, I got to be bright-eyed for that job hunt.
All right. I'll let you go on one condition. That you don't take a job until you talk it over with me tomorrow night. I don't want you to be no factory girl.
Yeah. There, you see? You are worrying about me. Mac, I guess you've been the best thing in the world for me tonight. I was kind of in the dump.
No, there's no place for a girl either. I don't know, is it a go for tomorrow night?
Are you going to take me to a place for a girl to be?
100 of them if you want them. I'll drop by about 8. We'll take a ride and get to see how you're doing as a business girl.
I'll be ready. But I'm warning you, I'm liable to be a president of something by then. I walked, I'm telling you. I never knew I could walk so much. And then about 3:30, I went into this dime store and got the job.
Huh? How much you going to make?
$28.50 to start.
Well, if that ain't a fortune.
Well, you don't have to live on it.
As if I could. Ah, don't be a sucker, Edie.
I'm not being a sucker. That'll buy me some clothes. At least I'll be able to look people in the eye.
I thought you said you were sick of being a poor girl.
I said I got sick of being the poor girl in school. If I'm around other girls that are making $28.50 a week, well, that's all right. At least I'll fit.
A funny way to look at it.
Well, that's the way I do look at it.
Well, then you're being a sucker. If all you want out of life is $28.50 a week, then I give you credit for more sense than you got. You'll get old quick that way.
I didn't see any crowds waiting to offer me any more.
You won't get any more in a dime store. How'd you like $100 a day?
What kind of hop are you on?
I just asked you a question.
$100 a day. And what if I would like it? Then what? Does that make me a standout in the crowd?
Well, if you're smart, you'll make it.
It sounds crazy to me, Mac. I don't get it. I don't know what you got in your mind, but you brought it up, so why don't you spill it?
Wait till I pull off the road. I did some inquiring about you on my own today. I talked to the guy I'm working for.
It must have been over some high-powered glasses to be talking like this.
This is small talk, Edie. How bad do you want $100 a day?
Well, I don't know, Mac. I gotta know what you're talking about.
I mean, if you knew you were 90% safe, would you go against the book? Knowing these dumb cops around here, would you work against them?
I haven't got any friends in the force, I guess. What would I have to do?
You'd work with me, Edie. You and me, working together. And to show you how safe it is, I've been in the business for almost 1.5 years. I never even come close to the law. It's duller than a dime store would be, but 2 bills a day.
I never heard of so much money.
Like I said, the small talk, Edie, there's more. That's what I meant when I called you a sucker for throwing your hat in the air for that $28.50.
I wasn't throwing my hat. I was
all
just...
right. You were going to put yourself into a harness like the rest of the plugs from outside of town. Don't want to be poor girls, but they settle for peanuts. Ah, that ain't for you, Edie.
Well, I guess that's as far as I was looking. Just my own side of the street.
Who tells you which side is yours? There's some dough, you name it yourself, only call it an avenue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does, Mac. It's behind the whole thing. I've been on the wrong side of that money fence all my life.
Sure, I was too.
You don't
have
to tell me anymore, Mac. I'll go along with you. Little Edie's looking for a place to fit, and so far the avenue sounds good to me.
You won't go wrong, Edie. Safer than walking in traffic. You and me together from now on.
You don't hear me beefing about that, do you?
You stick around, baby, and see how good it gets. Carson, this is the girl I was talking about. Edie Hayes.
Hello.
Well, she wants to go to work with us all right, and you can take my word she'll keep her mouth shut and do things our way.
Yeah.
I'm going to start teaching her the ropes today, and by tomorrow or the day after, we'll be underway. She's going to clout for me.
It's your neck.
Well, you never went wrong on me yet, did you?
I'm not asking any questions. She looks a little young to me. Rats like her blow up in the corners. But you know the score.
No, Edie grew up young. She'll be all right.
Yeah, like I said, it's your neck. Keep her out of the corners. Let's see some action. I guess that's all.
Okay, we'll see you later. Come on, Edie. You got a few things to learn. They're in big business, Edie. It's one of the biggest hot car syndicates in the country. It's run as careful as a bank. They got offices like Carson's in all the big cities and seven states.
Well, aren't any of the big shots friendlier than him?
None of them are smarter, and that's what counts. Now, we got guys in garages all over town, and all they do is make duplicate keys for every decent-looking car that comes in. They give me the keys and the name of the owners, and then I check them through the phone book and start casing the cars. And that's where you come in.
Mac, just take care of me, that's all. Don't point me wrong.
Well, you gotta quit worrying, Edie. You'd go nuts if you got mirrors. Now, look. I case a car two or three days, sometimes a week, before we touch it. I know when the owner parks it and when he picks it up. We play it careful as a bank, I tell you. You know I wouldn't take any chances with you, don't you?
Yeah, I know it, Mac.
Sure you do. I'll give you the easiest ones all the way through. You got the keys. All you have to do is get in, drive a few blocks, and turn it over to another guy who'll get it out of sight.
I'll be all right, Mac. Honest, I will.
Now, you aren't telling me nothing. I know you will. Wait till those bills start rolling in. $50 a pickup, and I'll promise you two a day. Baby, you'll really be all right then. The first one's the toughest. This is really a cinch. Just one block down from here on the same side of the street. Second car from the corner. It's a dark green Plymouth sedan. Are you set?
Sure. I gotta start someplace.
There's not a thing to worry about. Belongs to a guy that works in the back office of the building across the street. When he goes in, he stays in. Just start thinking right now that it's your car and walk up to it that way. The doors will be locked, but here's the key.
Yeah. Yeah, I got everything, including some shakes.
Yeah, well, I had them too the first time. Go ahead, baby. Get your feet wet. I'll be waiting for you. We'll calm you down when you get back.
Okay, Mac. Here goes little Edie, heading for the avenue.
Edith, your pa and me was talking about you again last night.
Talking or arguing?
He's awful mad about the way you're acting.
You two are spending more time living my life than your own these days. I hope it makes you happy.
Well, I can't reason with him no more. I had a hard enough time when you quit school, but now...
Oh, yeah? Now what?
Well, you don't tell us nothing about your job. You come and go when you want to.
I told you about my job.
Oh, the Lord knows you're spending enough on clothes for one that doesn't keep you any busier than yours does.
Well, that's the way selling stuff goes. Sometimes I meet people at night and sometimes in the daytime. But whose business is it? I'm paying room and board. What more do you want?
We want you to act like a daughter. That's what we want. You've changed something awful since you quit school. You talked about being a tramp then. Well, you're really acting like one now.
Oh, shut up, Mom.
You ain't the same girl you was. Your pa ain't going to stand for much more of it.
You're darn right I'm a different girl. That's what I started out to be. I quit school so I could be a different girl. Maybe you want me to go to work in the factory with Pa, marry some jerk down there so I can slave for him all my life like you have. Maybe that's what you want.
We want you to be a good girl.
Who said I wasn't? Who said it? Pa? Answer me, Mom.
You said some things.
Is that where you got that tramp stuff? Let me tell you something. I was born a tramp, a lousy, ragged, commercial street tramp.
Edith.
And as soon as I had enough sense to know when I ran into different people, I darn soon learned that I was a tramp. Now I'm trying to grow out of it, and nobody's going to stop me.
Wait till your pa hears.
Yeah, well, I'll tell him, too. You just don't know enough to see what people think of you. Well, I've had enough. You can take this shack and the torn linoleum and the dingy lace curtains. I'm moving out. Questions, questions, questions. I was eating and breathing them. So I told her what she could do with them.
Sure, Edie. Better that way.
They just got on my nerves, that's all. Can't figure how I want to live my own life. I like it this way, don't you, Mac?
Sure, Edie, sure. We'd better go.
I like it this way. How long we been together now, Mac?
About 3 weeks, a little over.
Sure seems like a long time, doesn't it? We've been making a lot of money because I'm a good partner, huh, Mac?
Yeah, but don't let it go to your head. Take it easy and don't talk about dough so much, will you? Come on, we gotta go. The boss will be waiting for us.
Oh, what do we have to go up there for, Mac? What's the matter with staying here?
Sure, when the boss wants you to come over, it's a good idea to go. You like to make money, don't you?
Oh, sure I do.
And get smart. If he wants to be friendly, play along. Come on, you can get some fresh air on the way up. Play it smart, Edie. Keep your thinking to yourself.
Sure, Mac. I'll be as friendly as a puppy. I'll roll on the floor.
Well.
Hi, boss.
Come on in. I thought maybe you'd changed your mind. How are you, Edie?
Okay. Say, what a pretty apartment.
Yeah. You guys are paying part of the rent. It's about time you saw it. You look good in it, Edie. You're fit.
Yeah? Wouldn't any girl?
No, I wouldn't say that. Say, Mac, would you do me a favor?
Sure. What is it?
I want you to run down and get a couple of packs of cigarettes, will you? I just ran out.
Oh, yeah. Where's the closest place?
Right down the lobby. Here's some change.
Oh, forget it, boss. I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, thanks. Sit down, Edie.
Oh, this is sure a pretty place.
Cigarette?
Yeah, I think I thought you said you just ran out.
No, not really. I just wanted to talk to you. Is that all right?
What about?
About you.
About the job?
Yeah, about that, too. You know, you can go a long way if you play ball with me, Edie. I'll get you off the street and into the office. More money.
I don't get this. If it's what I think it is, Mac isn't going to like it.
Mac's all right. He knows. I told him I changed my mind about you after the first time I met you. He won't stand in the way.
You mean he knew when he brought me over here?
Sure, Edie. I don't pull any punches, especially with guys under me. I could break him in a minute. Don't you believe me?
Yeah, sure. I'm just trying to get my feet under me. What about me?
What about you?
What am I? Like a library book to be passed around to anybody with a card?
No, don't look at it that way. You're a cute kid. You got lots of looks. And I figure you got brains to go with them. Come here, Edie.
No. Don't. Please don't.
Oh, come on. What's the matter, Edie? Don't act like I'm poisoned.
No,
I'm all right,
don't.
Edie. Come here.
Please
come
let
here.
Me go.
Relax, Edie.
No.
Don't fight, baby. Play
no,
it smart now.
Let me go. Let go, you dirty.
Come
please
here, Edie.
No, get away.
All right, sister. You called it. Get her out of here, Mac. The party's over.
And he said you knew. You knew about it when you took me over there.
That's right.
That makes you worse than he is.
Figure it out, Edie. What could I do?
You're afraid of him. You're yellow.
What kind of people you think you mixed up with? Bridge players? You ain't no guy to monkey around with if you like living. You played it stupid. Now I don't know what's going to happen.
Mac, I'm cutting your girlfriend's money. I'm cutting her from $50 a pickup to $15. Tell her, will you?
Yeah, I'll tell her. Guess she didn't have the brains I gave her credit for.
Well, forget that. Tell her. Let me know how she takes it. Let me know right away what she says. You understand?
Yeah. I think I do, boss. Now listen. If you want to get out of this at all, don't say nothing. Just take the cut and clam up about it.
I listened to you before. Your talking doesn't weigh much now.
I'm trying to help you.
You can forget it. I'm getting out.
That's where you're wrong. You don't quit business like this. There's $1 million tied up in the syndicate. They don't figure one little dame worth nothing, I'm telling you.
What are you telling me?
That you'll never get away. They can't have anybody roaming around the country that knows as much as you do. They'll find you wherever you go, and they'll get rid of you. That's what I'm telling you.
They'll have to do some looking, then. I got my ticket.
You're playing it stupid again, Edie. But I'll give you one more break. I gotta go back and tell Carson how you took this.
Because you're yellow.
No. Because if I didn't, I'd be on the lam with you, and I know better. I'm just telling you. Don't waste no time. Get out of here, fast.
Don't worry about little Edie. She's got everything all worked out. I'm not out after profit tonight.
Okay, Edith. That'll be enough for tonight. We'll have to go through this story again in the morning when we can get somebody to take it down. I guess you won't mind, huh?
I guess it'll make a lot of difference if I do, huh? Sure, I'll tell it once an hour, just so there's a payoff. When are you going to go after him?
You are eager, aren't you?
Sure. I was born eager. I want to be in the same courtroom with him. I want to see that Casanova squirm. I want to get this all settled. After that, I guess I'll be ready for a rest.
All right, Sergeant. Take her away.
Edith Hayes eventually did find a place into which he fit. Not a haven of luxury and regained pride such as her dreamed of avenue, but a place on the roster of a detention home, a position in the great sisterhood of others like her who turned against society. We've told you the story. To review the case, we have here in the studio Mr. George Ososki, Chief Probation Officer of San Francisco's Juvenile Court. Mr. Ososki.
Thank you. I have reviewed the case of Edith Hayes thoroughly. To my mind, her story is not yet complete. She had reached a point in her path from which there was no turning. She had burned all her bridges, broken every shred of connection between herself and her family, and turned against her criminal associates for revenge. Edith Hayes will be released from the detention home next year. Between now and that time, the juvenile court authorities in her city are faced with the problem of healing the almost incurable fracture between Edith and her family, or finding some other place in society from which she may start a free life again. In which direction she will go is a moot question. With proper guidance, she could be led to good, useful citizenship. Face to face once more with the criminally inclined, she could just as easily move toward another appearance on the police blotter. Simply put, the original cause for Edith's brief and tragic escapade was snobbery, class distinction. At the most receptive age in a girl's life, she was made to feel inferior because of her economic station in the community. She was scorned and shamed by those who were more fortunately placed on that scale. The reaction is the same against any type of prejudice, hatred, and the desire for superiority. Many communities, realizing the importance of this class distinction in regard to juvenile delinquency, are attempting to do something about it through coordinating councils which are established to keep an accurate survey of the juveniles in the various economic brackets, and to bring about better understanding between them by organizing social and recreational activities that include young people from every level. But no council alone can cure the disease of snobbery. It must be attacked originally in every home, every kitchen, every living room, for snobbery is acquired with age. Among 7-8-year-old children, class distinction is no problem. Where then does it gain its importance? When is it accepted as a philosophy? One of the interviews in the file on Edith Hayes brings out this point and its result quite clearly and brutally.
I've been sitting next to a girl. We've been together all the way through from the second to third grade. We used to play together and walk partway home together. But you ought to see us now. The princess and the tramp.
Edith, you can't talk like that no more.
Talking about the dances she and the rest of them go to. And their new clothes and permanent waves. Oh, that's all right, but I heard her talking about me today, and that is...
Don't pay no attention,
Edith. Pay no attention. There's going to be a party for the English class at her house. And you know what she said?
Don't pay no attention.
I heard her. She said, oh, we can't ask her. She just wouldn't fit. Well, she's right. I'm not trying to...
Oh, let them talk. That doesn't hurt us.
Not anymore. It don't hurt us. Because little Edie isn't going to be there for them to talk about. Little Edie's going to stay on her own side of the street from now on. Little Edie knows where she fits.
We invite you to listen again next week to Are These Our Children? Another dramatized case history from the files of Juvenile Delinquency Court. That's 7 days away. 7 days to ask, are these our children? Title, Are These Our Children, is used through the courtesy of RKO Pictures. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
From November 17th of 1947 on ABC, an episode of Are These Our Children, the only crime drama that I know of on radio to explore case histories exclusively from juvenile delinquency court. Unfortunately, I don't have too many episodes in my collection. Would love to find more than the handful that I do have. But we heard the case of Edith Hayes from November 17th, 1947. And you heard it on the Upstate Radio Theater. My name is Jake Longwell. I'm here every week at the same time with an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The full range of old-time radio shows from the 1930s. Right through to the so-called end of the golden age of radio in the early 60s, occasionally even presenting some more contemporary radio drama, but mostly old-time radio. You can email the program with your feedback. I'd love to hear from you. You can send email to qualityradioproductions@yahoo.com. Again, that's qualityradioproductions@yahoo.com. And also, visit our blog and website for full program listings, and also your chance to stream or even download episodes of the radio theater at your convenience. All of that is available for you at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. I'll give that to you again, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. As we continue on, we'll wrap up this edition of the radio theater with an episode of The Hall of Fantasy. This was one of many programs that permeated the radio airwaves in the late 40s and early 50s in much the same vein as The Mysterious Traveler or even Suspense to some extent, exploring the supernatural, the supernormal, and the unknown. This broadcast, or this series rather, ran on Mutual during the late 40s and early 50s, and it was repackaged for syndication in the 1970s during the old-time radio revival era, and from what I understand, it was aired on several public radio stations during that decade. But we have an episode from the original Mutual airing from September 21st of 1953. This episode is entitled The Shadow People, as we walk down the Hall of Fantasy on the Upstate Radio Theater.
And now, the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friend. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of The Shadow People.
Elaine, have you been I mean, have you seen anything else since you spoke to me last?
No, I haven't. Ever since Mother died, nothing's happened.
Well, I only hope... It came from upstairs. Come on.
I don't know what to think.
I only hope that...
David, if anything's happened to him...
We'll see in a moment.
There's no light in this room.
You wait here, Elaine. Where's the light?
Over to your left. David. What's wrong? Why didn't you leave the light on?
Your father's dead, Elaine.
In just a moment, the Hall of Fantasy will present The Shadow People. And now for our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Shadow People.
Somewhere along the line of your life, you've met them. You have come in contact with The Shadow People. When did we first discuss it? Oh, yes, Brian and Elaine and I. It was in my apartment. There was only one light on in the entire place. What's wrong? Elaine, what's the matter?
Oh, it's silly, I know, but I thought I saw something in that doorway over there.
Where?
Over there, right over there. Where are you going, David?
Over to that archway, just to let you know that nothing's here.
You see, Elaine, nothing's wrong, nothing at all.
Are you satisfied that there's no one else here but us?
Yes, I'm sorry. I just thought that I... Leave the overhead lights on.
I'm sorry. I thought that...
Put them back on, David, please.
All right, Elaine.
Look, what's bothering you, sis?
I don't know. It's just that... I don't know.
Tell us about it, Elaine. Tell us what's bothering you.
You promise that you... You won't laugh at me?
Of course not.
Brian?
Oh, Elaine, I'm your brother. If something's troubling you, I'd like to know about it.
All right, then. The reason I was so upset was the fact that I saw someone or something standing in that archway.
But Elaine, David showed you that there was no one else in here. When the lights were put on, you saw for yourself that we were alone.
I'm not talking about something you can see in the light, Brian. I'm not talking about a human being.
Then what's it all about, Elaine?
In the darkness, I saw something that can't be seen in a lighted area. And I've seen it several times before.
You're sure you're not imagining this, Elaine?
Oh, I don't have that good an imagination, Brian.
How long have you seen this thing, Elaine?
Well, it started about 6 weeks ago. You were in Detroit on business, Brian. Mom and Dad were on vacation. I was in the house by myself, in the library. There was only one light on. I sat in the chair beneath it, reading. Several times I thought that something was watching me. I felt there was someone in the room with me, standing right in back of me. Every so often, I'd glance back over my shoulder, but there seemed to be nothing there. And then I thought I heard someone whispering. I wasn't sure, but when I heard it again, I got up and I looked all over the house. Oh, I'm not easily frightened, you know that, but out in the hallway... It was almost entirely black. Luckily, I was near a light switch. I looked back over my shoulder, and I saw this huge, hulking shape for the first time. And I heard a voice. Or rather, the whisper of a voice. I couldn't distinguish the words, but that dark shape seemed to be moving towards me. My hand was on the light switch, and I turned it on. And the minute the light flooded the hallway, the shape was gone. There was nothing there. I was alone again. As long as there's light, I know it can't hurt me. I know it can't reach me.
You might have imagined it, you know.
Of course, that's possible, but I'm sure I didn't. It was so real. So real, that shape in the darkness. It was the very essence of evil itself.
There was an old man I knew of, a Dr. Hesedius. I'd heard that he knew quite a good deal about the supposed supernatural manifestations which had taken place in the world. I went to him, to see if he knew anything that might explain the events of the story Elaine had told us.
Yes, my good sir. What do you wish?
I have an appointment with Dr. Hesselius.
Oh, yes, yes. He mentioned something about it. You are Mr. Drake.
Yes.
If you'll come inside.
Thank you.
Dr. Hesselius is in the study. Please come with me. Doctor, a visitor for you.
Oh, yes. Bring him in. You may go now.
Yes, Doctor.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Sit down, please, in that chair over there.
Thank you, sir.
Now, what is the nature of your visit to me?
Well, I understand, Dr. Hesselius, that you have a great knowledge of the supernatural manifestations which have occurred on the Earth.
Great knowledge, Mr. Drake? No, hardly that. I have only scratched the surface in my years of study. Perhaps I can help you, then again, perhaps I cannot.
Well, may I tell you the story?
By all means, my good sir.
All right. Now, this didn't happen to me, Doctor, but to my fiancée. It seems that about 6 weeks ago, when she was alone... But when the light was on, the dark form disappeared. And that's the story, sir. As much of it as I can remember.
Mm-hmm. I see. It's a strange tale to tell.
I'm fully aware of that, Dr. Hesselius.
You say she seemed to hear whispered voices?
Yes, that's what she says.
I see. A moment, please. I have a book in my file. Oh, yes, here it is. This is the one. Yes. Perhaps I may be able to help you after all. Let me see. This is a very ancient book, Mr. Drake. I seem to remember... Yes. Here is an account of a happening such as you relate. And we shall live on the earth, and they shall not see us.
Yes, it has been foretold by the ruler of the darkness. They who live by day, retire to sleep by night, shall never know that we walk with them, that we watch them, that we wait for our chance. Only in the night will they see us, for in the daylight we are not seen. Only in the night... When the darkness grows together and the forms of the shadow people are shaped from the blackness, they will know us.
They will know that we are their companions, for we are the shadow people. I knew I had read something similar to the story you have told me, Mr. Drake.
Dr. Hesselius, what can we do?
Well, give me a little time. Let me see if I can find any more references to these people of the darkness. One more thing, Mr. Drake. Be sure that your fiancée is never left alone at night. Be sure that there is some living thing, animal or human, which accompanies her every second of the night. For she is in danger, Mr. Drake. A terrible danger.
Back now to our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne, entitled... The Shadow People.
That night, the night of the day I had seen Hesselius, Elaine's mother died. She died in her sleep. When she failed to appear for breakfast, Elaine's father went upstairs to see what was wrong. When he entered her room, he discovered that she was dead. The family doctor couldn't explain it, for Elaine's mother had been in perfect health. A few weeks later, I was out at the house spending a weekend with them. I glanced at the clock on the mantel, and it showed 11.
I can't understand why Brian hasn't returned from town.
Well, he said he had some extra work to catch up on. He told me this morning that he might be late.
Well, 11 o'clock, I'm going upstairs. Glad you came out, David. It's good seeing you again.
It's a pleasure to be here, sir.
Well, don't stay up too late. See you both in the morning.
Night.
Night, Dad. Good night, Mr. Davis.
He isn't the same, David. Ever since Mother died, he hasn't been the same.
I didn't realize that until tonight. He's changed.
I only hope that he'll start living again. Ever since she died, It seems that a part of him died with her.
Elaine, have you been... I mean, have you seen anything else since you spoke to me last?
No, I haven't. Ever since Mother died, nothing's happened.
Well, I only hope...
Dad!
Came from upstairs. Come on.
You don't think...
I don't know what to think. I only hope...
David, if anything's happened to him...
We'll see in a moment.
There's no light in his room.
You wait here, Elaine. Where's the light?
Over to your left. David, what's wrong? Why didn't you leave the light on?
Your father's dead, Elaine. I'd walked into the darkened bedroom. On the bed was Elaine's father. It didn't take a second look for me to know that he was dead. I switched off the light and walked back into the hallway to tell Elaine what happened. And then from the room there had come an eerie, quiet laughter. In the darkness of that room was some unknown evil power. The voice itself was unearthly. There was no substance to it. It sounded as if it came from the darkness itself.
No, I don't believe you.
It's the truth, Elaine. There's nothing more I can do. We'll have to notify the police.
Tell me it's not the truth, David. Tell me it's not true.
I'm sorry, Elaine. I wish I could. Your father's dead. After the burial, Dr. Hesselius got in touch with me. He said that he wanted to meet both Elaine and Brian, that he wanted to talk to the three of us. Accordingly, a few nights later, he came out to their house.
Miss Davis, will you tell me just when you saw the first manifestation?
The night Brian was in Detroit.
Now, Miss Davis, you have even seen this apparition in the company of other people, is that correct?
Yes. The night at David's apartment.
All right. Now I'll tell you what I think. You are in deadly danger, Miss Davis. These beings want to claim you. So far they have had no success. Only in the darkness do they have power. Little by little, step by step, they have been removing the obstacles in their way to reaching you. First your mother, and then your father, Miss Davis. Both died in the same fashion. In the darkness, death struck at them. Now tell me, do you feel their presence here in this room as I talk to you?
Yes.
Turn out the lights, Brian.
No.
Stand by the switch, if you please, Brian. If anything happens, turn the lights back on.
All right. Dr. Hesselius, I don't...
Do you want me to continue working with you?
Yes, sir.
All right, then. Brian, turn off the lights.
Yes, doctor.
The room now is in darkness, Miss Davis. Do you feel or see anything?
No, I... Yes. Yes, I do.
Do you see anything?
Yes.
Doctor, I don't...
Be quiet, you fool. I know what I'm doing.
In front of me. The darkness gathering together into a huge, terrible...
Not only do you see us, Miss Davis, but everyone else in the room also will see the vague shapes forming themselves in the blackness. We do not want you, Dr. Hesselius. The girl we want. We advise you to drop this case. You'll only bring down the wrath of the shadow people upon your head. The girl. We want the girl. Do not stop us. Let us take her now.
Turn on the light.
They're gone.
Miss Davis, are you all right?
Yes, I am.
Just as she said. The darkness. I saw it form into something, too.
So did I. What are we going to do, Dr. Hesselius?
At the present moment, I don't know. But this much I do know. You must leave this house immediately. You must try to get out of their reach. I don't know if that is possible. I hope it is. I shall have to return to my home. I must learn if there is some manner by which we can defeat these creatures. For the moment, leave this house. Dispose of it in any manner you may see fit. But leave this house.
Back now to our story, an original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Shadow People.
spent the night in my apartment, the three of us. The following day, Brian and Elaine made arrangements to dispose of the house. In the afternoon, Dr. Hesselius called me and asked that I come to see him.
David, I'm glad you're here.
Anything new, Doctor?
Yes and no. You realize, of course, that this spiritual manifestation is not new, that it has gone on for centuries.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
It's true, David. De Maupassant wrote what was supposedly a fiction story about the manifestation, David. He called it the Orla. However, according to the information here on my desk, it was taken from an actual case history. Of course, he embroidered the story, added a few touches to something he didn't realize actually existed.
But have you found anything with which we can fight them?
Everything depends upon an answer I received from a colleague of mine in Paris, Dr. Henri Renault. I dispatched a telegram to him last night.
Why hasn't he answered by now?
There are certain things that must be done. It will take a few days, I'm afraid. We have to wait, David. There's nothing else we can do.
In the next few days, the house was sold, and Brian and Elaine moved into a newer, more modern home a few miles from my apartment. Cecilia said it might take a few days for them to build up their power. I spent the night at the new house. The lights were left on, and I watched for any unusual occurrence. In the daytime, I'd return to my apartment and get some sleep. About 4 days after Elaine and Brian moved into the new house, I was at home when Hesselius phoned me. Hello?
David?
Yes, Dr. Hesselius?
I hate to tell you this, David.
What's the matter? What's wrong?
They were a step ahead of me, David. I just received word that Renault died or was killed at the very moment I sent the telegram to him.
Step by step, they had outwitted us. For they had anticipated every move we'd make. Even Dr. Hesselius was at a loss as to what to do. He agreed to meet me at the Davis house.
What did you want to see us about, Dr. Hesselius?
Did you find out anything more?
I'm sorry to say that I haven't. At the moment, I'm at a complete loss. I don't know what to do.
But what did you want to see us about this evening?
Merely to check, to see if anything else has happened. Miss Davis, have you seen or heard anything?
Not in the house, only in my dreams.
Your dreams?
Yes. When I go to sleep at night, in my dreams, in the darkness, I see them.
And it's grown worse, much worse. I was hoping that it would not have progressed so far. There has been no disturbance in this house, but now they disturb your sleep, Miss Davis. Now, you must stay awake for as long as you can. I want the three of you to move into my house. Perhaps that will give you more protection.
That night, we moved over to Vesuvius' house. Perhaps Elaine would have more protection there. From there, we might be able to devise some plan of action, some way to beat those beings. For a few days, things were quiet. The shadow people seemed to have withdrawn. For a while, I thought that we might have succeeded in thwarting their purpose. Elaine no longer complained of troubled sleep. But that condition lasted for a few days only. About 10 days later, they made themselves known and felt again. That night, we were in the study, when suddenly Hesselius whirled around and...
Elaine, what are you looking at?
Outside the house. Right where the light leaves off, I see them.
She's right, Dr. Hesselius. I can see them, too.
What should we do, Doctor?
Nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
There's nothing we can do.
We can't just...
We can't do anything, Brian. Don't you understand that they have us at their mercy? The greatest man in my field was Henri Renault. If he could do nothing against them, what do you think we can do?
He's right, Brian. There's nothing we can do.
As long as the house remains lighted, just so long will they remain outside. If the lights were...
That sounds...
When my father was killed, the same sound we heard, the same sound.
The lights! What's happened to the lights, Laura?
Right?
Be quiet, please. I thought of this emergency.
A candle.
That's right, Miss Davis. As long as this burns, this one candle will be safe. For they cannot advance into the light. They are limited by the darkness. As long as the candle burns, they will have to remain outside of this room.
Around you, in every every room of the house. In the darkness outside, we are around you. This time you shall not escape. This time we will blame you.
Take it easy, Brian. I can't stand it. I'm getting out of here.
Brian, come back.
Don't be a fool. I'm going after him.
Stay here.
We just can't let him go.
He won't have a chance. I doubt it.
Miss Davis, I'm afraid that your brother is dead.
The wind, Doctor. Listen to the wind.
I know.
Yes, Doctor. Listen to the wind. You must realize by now that the three of you haven't a chance. You must know in your minds that we can destroy you at any moment we desire. But, Dr. Aeselius, you may still save your own life. Let the others go. Give them to us.
No. No, you will have to take all of us.
Shall we destroy your light? Shall we move in on you now?
As you will. Do as you will. Sorry, David. Candle is out.
In the darkness, the figures in the darkness.
Characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
The Hall of Fantasy, and a story penned by Richard Thorne. The Shadow People, that mutual broadcast from September 21st, 1953. And that will bring to a close this hour of the program. Thank you so much for your company. I'm Jake Longwell. Do join me again soon for more great sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.